past the other towering male who now appeared. Lorkin. Even Lorkin had answered his call. The time for gratitude would come later, and the dark-haired demi-fae didn't say anything as Rowan rushed to the battlement gates. What he saw beyond almost drove him to his knees. The wall of flame was in tatters, but still protecting the barrier. But the three creatures. Aelin was standing in front of them, hunched and panting, sword limp in her hand. They advanced, and a feeble blue flame sprang up before them. They swiped it away with a wave of their hands. Another flame sprang up, and her knees buckled. The shield of flame surged and receded, pulsing like the light around her body. She was burning out. Why hadn't she retreated? Another step closer, and the thing said something that had her raising her head. Rowan knew he could not reach her, didn't even have the breath to shout a warning as Aelin gazed into the face of the creature before her. She had lied to him. She had wanted to save lives, yes, but she had gone out there with no intention of saving her own. He drew in a breath, to run, to roar, to summon his power. But a wall of muscle slammed into him from behind, tackling him to the grass. Though Rowan shoved and twisted against Gavriel, he could do nothing against the 4 centuries of training and feline instinct that had pinned him, keeping him from running through those gates and into the blackness that destroyed worlds. The creature took Aelin's face in its hands, and her sword thudded to the ground, forgotten. Rowan was screaming as the creature pulled her into its arms, as she stopped fighting, as her flames winked out, and darkness swallowed her whole. Chapter 53. There was blood everywhere. As before, Selena stood between the 2 bloody beds, reeking breath caressing her ear, her neck, her spine. She could feel the Volg princes roving around her, circling with predators' gates, devouring her misery and pain bit by bit, tasting and savoring. There was no way out, and she could not move as she looked from one bed to the other. Nehemia's corpse, mangled and mutilated. Because she had been too late, and because she had been a coward. And her parents, throats slit from ear to ear, gray and lifeless, dead from an attack they should have sensed, an attack she should have sensed. Maybe she had sensed it, and that was why she had crept in that night. But she had been too late then as well. 2 beds, 2 fractures in her soul, cracks through which the abyss had come pouring in long before the Volg princes ever seized her. A claw scraped along her neck, and she jerked away, stumbling toward her parents' corpses. The moment that darkness had swept around her, snuffing out her exhausted flame, it began eating away at the reckless rage that had compelled her to step out of the barrier. Here, in the dark, the silence was complete. Eternal. She could feel the Volg slinking around her, hungry and eager and full of cold, ancient malice. She'd expected to have the life sucked from her instantly. But they had just stayed close in the dark, brushing up against her like cats, until a faint light had formed, and she'd found herself between these 2 beds. She was unable to look away, unable to do anything but feel her nausea and panic rise bit by bit. And now... now. Though her body remained unmoving on the bed, Nehemia's voice whispered, "Coward." Selena vomited. A faint, hoarse laugh sounded behind her. She backed up, farther and farther from the bed where Nehemia lay. Then she was standing in a sea of red, red and white and gray, and... She now stood like a wraith in her parents' bed, where she had lain 10 years ago, awakening between their corpses to the servant woman's screaming. It was those screams she could hear now, high and endless and... coward. Selena fell against the headboard, as real and smooth and cold as she remembered it. There was nowhere else for her to go. It was a memory. These were not real things. She pressed her palms against the wood, fighting her building scream. Coward. Nehemia's voice again filled the room. Selena squeezed her eyes shut and said into the wall, I know. I know. She did not fight, as cold, claw-tipped fingers stroked at her cheeks, at her brow, at her shoulders. One of the claws severed clean through her long braid as it whipped her around. She did not fight, as darkness swallowed her whole and dragged her down deep. The darkness had no end and no beginning. It was the abyss that had haunted her steps for 10 years, and she free fell into it, welcomed it. There was no sound, only the vague sense of going toward a bottom that might not exist, or that might mean her true end. Maybe the Vog princes had devoured her, turning her into a husk. Maybe her soul was forever trapped here, in this plunging darkness. Perhaps this was hell. The blackness was rippling now, shifting with sound and color that she passed through. She lived through each image, each memory worse than the next. Kaol's face as he saw what she truly was, Nehemia's mutilated body, her final conversation with her friend, the damning things she'd said. When your people are lying dead around you, don't come crying to me. It had come true. Now thousands of slaves from Eelway had been slaughtered for their bravery. She tumbled through a maelstrom of the moments when she had proved her friend right. She was a waste of space and breath, a stain on the world, unworthy of her birthright. This was hell, and looked like hell, as she saw the bloodbath she'd created on the day she rampaged through Endovir, the screams of the dying, the men she'd cut apart, tore at her like phantom hands. This was what she deserved. She went mad during that first day in Endovir. Went mad as the descent slowed, and she was stripped and strapped between two blood-splattered posts. The cold air nipped at her bare breasts, a bite that was nothing compared to the terror and agony as a whip cracked, and... She jerked against the ropes binding her. She scarcely had time to draw in a breath before the crack sounded again, cleaving the world like lightning, cleaving her skin. Coward, Nehemia said behind her, and the whip cracked. Coward. The pain was blinding. Look at me. She couldn't lift her head, though, couldn't turn. Look at me. She sagged against her ropes, but managed to look over her shoulder. Nehemia was whole, beautiful and untouched, her eyes full of damning hatred. And then from behind her emerged Sam, handsome and tall. His death had been so similar to Nehemia's, and yet so much worse, drawn out over hours. She had not saved him either. When she beheld the iron-tipped whip in his hands, when he stepped past Nehemia and let the whip unfurl onto the rocky earth, Selena let out a low, quiet laugh. She welcomed the pain with open arms as he took a deep breath, clothes shifting with the movement as he snapped the whip. The iron tip. Oh, gods, it ripped her clean open, knocked her legs out from underneath her. Again, Selena told him, the word little more than a rasp. Again. Sam obeyed. There was only the thud of leather on wet flesh as Sam and Nehemia took turns, and a line of people formed behind them, waiting for what they deserved as payment for what she had failed to do. Such a long line of people. So many lives that she had taken or failed to protect. Again. 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 She had not walked past the barrier expecting to defeat the Vogue princes. She had walked out there for the same reason she had snapped that day in Endovir. But the Vogue princes had not killed her yet. She had felt their pleasure as she begged for the whipping. It was their sustenance. Her mortal flesh was nothing to them. It was the agony within that was the prize. They would draw this out forever, keep her as their pet. There was no one to save her, no one who could enter their darkness and live. One by one, they groped through her memories. She fed them, gave them everything they wanted and more. Back and back, sorting through the years as they plunged into the dark, twining together. She did not care. She had not looked into the Vogue's prince's eyes expecting to ever again see sunrise. She did not know how long she fell with them. But then there was a rushing, roaring below. A frozen river. Whispers and foggy light were rising to meet them. No, not rising. This was the bottom. An end to the abyss. And an end to her, perhaps, at last. She didn't know if the Vogue prince's hissing was from anger or pleasure as they slammed into that frozen river at the bottom of her soul. Chapter 54. Trumpets announced his arrival. Trumpets and silence as the people of Orinth crowded the steep streets winding up to the white palace that watched over them all. It was the first sunny day in weeks, the snow on the cobblestone streets melting quickly, though the wind still had a final bite of winter to it, enough so that the King of Otterlin and his entire massive party were bundled in furs that covered their regalia. Their gold and crimson flags, however, flapped in the crisp wind, the golden poles shining as brightly as the armor of their bearers, who trotted at the head of the party. She watched them approach from one of the balconies off the throne room, Adian at her side running a constant commentary about the state of their horses, armor, weapons, about the King of Otterlin himself, who rode near the front on a great black war horse. There was a pony beside him, bearing a smaller figure. His sniveling son, Adian told her. The whole castle was miserably quiet. Everyone was dashing around, but silently, tensely. Her father had been on edge at breakfast, her mother distracted, the whole court snarly and wearing far more weapons than usual. Only her uncle seemed the same. Only Orlan had smiled at her today, said she looked very pretty in her blue dress and golden crown, and tugged one of her freshly pressed curls. No one had told her anything about this visit, but she knew it was important, because even Adian was wearing clean clothes, a crown, and a new dagger, which he'd taken to tossing in the air. "Adian! Aelin!" someone hissed from inside the throne room. Lady Marion, her mother's dearest friend and handmaiden. "On the dais, now!" Behind the lovely lady peeked a night-black head of hair and onyx eyes. Elide, her daughter. The girl was too quiet and breakable for her to bother with usually, and Lady Marion, her nursemaid, coddled her own daughter endlessly. "Rat's balls!" Adian cursed. And Marion went red with anger, but did not reprimand. Proof enough that today was different. Dangerous, even. Her stomach shifted. But she followed Lady Marion inside, Adian at her heels as always, and perched on her little throne set beside her father's. Adian took up his place flanking her, shoulders back and head high, already her protector and warrior. The whole of Orinth was silent as the King of Otterlin entered their mountain home. She hated the King of Otterlin. He did not smile, not when he stalked into the throne room to greet her uncle and parents, not when he introduced his eldest son, Crown Prince Dorian Havilyard, and not when they came to the Great Hall for the largest feast she'd ever seen. He'd only looked at her twice so far, once during that initial meeting, when he'd stared at her long and hard enough that her father had demanded to know what he found so interesting about his daughter, and their whole court had tensed. But she hadn't broken his dark stare. She hated his scarred, brutish face and furs, hated the way he ignored his dark-haired son, who stood like a pretty doll beside him, his manner so elegant and graceful, his pale hands like little birds as they moved. The second time the king had looked at her had been at this table, where she now sat a few seats down, flanked by Lady Marian on the side closest to the king, and Adian on the other. There were daggers on Lady Marian's legs beneath her dress. She knew because she kept bumping into them. Lord Cal, Marian's husband, sat beside his wife, the steel on him gleaming. Alide, along with all the other children, had been sent upstairs. Only she and Adian, and Prince Dorian, were allowed here. Adian puffed with pride and barely restrained his temper when the King of Otterlin viewed her a second time, as if he could see through to her bones. Then the king was swept into conversation with her parents and uncle, and all the lords and ladies of the court who had placed themselves around the royal family. She had always known her court took no chances, not with her and not with her parents or uncle. Even now, she noticed the eyes of her father's closest friends darting to the windows and doorways as they maintained conversation with those around them. The rest of the hall was filled with the party from Otterlin and the outer circles of Orland's court, along with key merchants from the city who wanted to make ties with Otterlin, or something like that. But her attention was on the prince across from her, who seemed utterly ignored by his father in his own court. Shoved down near the end with her and Adian. He ate so beautifully, she thought, watching him cut into his roast chicken. Not a drop moved out of place. Not a scrap fell on the table. She had decent manners, while Adian was hopeless, his plate littered with bones and crumbs scattered everywhere, even some on her own dress. She'd kicked him for it, but his attention was too focused on the royals down the table. So both she and the crown prince were to be ignored then. She looked at the boy again, who was around her age, she supposed. His skin was from the winter, his blue-black hair neatly trimmed, his sapphire eyes lifted from his plate to meet hers. "You eat like a fine lady," she told him. His lips thinned, and color stained his ivory cheeks. Across from her, Quinn, her uncle's captain of the guard, choked on his water. The prince glanced at his father, still busy with her uncle, before replying. Not for approval, but in fear. "I eat like a prince," Dorian said quietly. "You do not need to cut your bread with a fork and knife," she said. A faint pounding started in her head, followed by a flickering warmth. But she ignored it. The hall was hot, as they'd shut all the windows for some reason. "Here in the north," she went on, as the prince's knife and fork remained where they were on his dinner roll, "you need not be so formal. We don't put on airs." Hen, one of Quinn's men, coughed pointedly from a few seats down. She could almost hear him saying, "Says the little lady with her hair pressed into careful curls, and wearing her new dress that she threatened to skin us over if we got dirty." She gave Hen an equally pointed look, then returned her attention to the foreign prince. He'd already looked down at his food again, as if he expected to be neglected for the rest of the night. And he looked lonely enough that she said, "If you like, you could be my friend." None of the men around him said anything, or coughed. Dorian lifted his chin. "I have a friend. He is to be Lord of Aniel someday, and the fiercest warrior in the land." She doubted Adian would like that claim, but her cousin remained focused down the table. She wished she'd kept her mouth closed. Even this useless foreign prince had friends. The pounding in her head increased, and she took a drink of her water. Water. Always water to cool her insides. Reaching for her glass, however, sent spikes of red-hot pain through her head, and she winced.
"Princess?"
Quinn said, always the first to notice. She blinked, black spots forming. But the pain stopped. No, not a stop, but a pause. A pause, then... Right between her eyes, it ached and pressed at her head, trying to get in. She rubbed her brows. Her throat closed up, and she reached for the water, thinking of coolness, of calm and cold, exactly as her tutors in the court had told her. But the magic was churning in her gut, burning up. Each pulse of pain in her head made it worse.
"Princess?"
Quinn said again. She got to her feet, legs wobbling. The blackness in her vision grew with each blow from the pain, and she swayed. Distantly, as if she were underwater, she heard Lady Marian say her name, reach for her, but she wanted her mother's cool touch. Her mother turned in her seat, face drawn, her golden earrings catching in the light. She stretched out an arm, beckoning. "What is it, Fireheart?" "I don't feel well," she said, barely able to get the words out. She gripped her mother's velvet-clad arm, for comfort and to keep her buckling knees from giving out. "What feels wrong?" her mother asked, even as she put a hand to her forehead. A flicker of worry, then a glance back at her father, who watched from beside the King of Otterlin. "She's burning up," she said softly. Lady Marian was suddenly behind her, and her mother looked up to say, "Have the healer go to her room." Marian was gone in an instant, hurrying to a side door. She didn't need a healer, and she gripped her mother's arm to tell her as much. Yet no words would come out as the magic surged and burned. Her mother hissed and jerked back, smoke rising from her dress, from where she had gripped her. "Aelin?" Her head gave a throb, a blast of pain, and then a wriggling, squirming inside her head. A worm of darkness pushing its way in. Her magic roiled, thrashing, trying to get it out, to burn it up, to save them both. But, "Aelin? Get it out!" she rasped, pushing at her temples as she backed away from the table. Two of the foreign lords grabbed Dorian from the table and swept him from the room. Her magic bucked like a stallion as the worm wriggled farther in. "Get it out!"
"Aelin?"
Her father was on his feet now, hand on his sword. Half the others were standing too, but she flung out a hand to keep them away, to warn them. Blue flame shot out. Two people dove in time to avoid it, but everyone was on their feet as the vacated seats went up in flames. The worm would latch into her mind and never let go. She grabbed at her head, her magic screaming, so loud it could shatter the world. And then she was burning, a living column of turquoise flame, sobbing as the dark worm continued its work and the walls of her mind began to give. Above her own voice, above the shouting in the hall, she heard her father's bellow, a command to her mother, who was on her knees, hands outstretched toward her in supplication.
Do it, Evelyn!
The pillar of flame grew hotter, hot enough that people were fleeing now. Her mother's eyes met her own, full of pleading and pain. Then water. A wall of water crashing down on her, slamming her to the stones, flowing down her throat, into her eyes, choking her, drowning her, until there was no air for her flame, only water and its freezing embrace. The King of Otterlin looked at her for a third time and smiled. The Volg princes enjoyed that memory, that terror and pain. As they paused to savor it, Selena understood. The King of Otterlin had used his power on her that night. Her parents could not have known that the person responsible for that dark worm, which had vanished as soon as she'd lost consciousness, was the man sitting beside them. There was another of them now, a fourth prince, living inside Narok, who said,
"The soldiers have almost taken the tunnel. Be ready to move soon."
She could feel him hovering over her, observing.
"You found me a prize that will interest our liege. Do not waste her. Sips only."
She tried to summon horror, tried to feel anything at the thought of where they would take her, what they would do to her. But she could feel nothing as the princes murmured their understanding, and the memory tumbled onward. Her mother thought it was an attack from Maeve, a vicious reminder of whatever debt she owed to make them look vulnerable. In the hours afterward, as she'd lain in the ice-cold bath adjacent to her bedroom, she had used her fey ears to overhear her parents and their court debating it from the sitting room of their suite. It had to be Maeve. No one else could do anything like that, or know that such a demonstration, in front of the King of Otterlin, who already loathed magic, would be detrimental. She did not want to talk, even once she was again capable of walking and speaking and acting like a princess. Insisting some normalcy might help. Her mother made her go to a tea the next afternoon with Prince Dorian, carefully guarded and monitored, with Adian sitting between them. And when Dorian's flawless manners faltered and he knocked over the teapot, spilling on her new dress, she'd made a good show of having Adian threaten to pummel him. But she didn't care about the prince, or the tea, or the dress. She could barely walk back to her room, and that night she dreamt of the maggot invading her mind, waking with screams and flames in her mouth. At dawn, her parents took her out of the castle, headed for their manor 2 days away. Their foreign visitors might have caused too much stress, the healer said. She suggested Lady Marian take her, but her parents insisted they go. Her uncle approved. The King of Otterlin, it seemed, would not stay in the castle with her magic running rampant, either. Adian remained in Orinth, her parents promising he would be sent for when she was settled again. But she knew it was for his safety. Lady Marian went with them, leaving her husband and Elide at the palace, for their safety too. A monster. That was what she was. A monster who had to be contained and monitored. Her parents argued the first 2 nights at the manor, and Lady Marian kept her company, reading to her, brushing her hair, telling her stories of her home in Paranth. Marian had been a laundress in the palace from her childhood, but when Evelyn arrived, they had become friends, mostly because the princess had stained her new husband's favorite shirt with ink and wanted to get it cleaned before he noticed. Evelyn soon made Marian her lady-in-waiting, and then Lord Lochan had returned from a rotation on the southern border. Handsome Cal Lochan, who somehow became the dirtiest man in the castle and constantly needed Marian's advice on how to remove various stains. who one day asked a bastard-born servant to be his wife. And not just wife, but Lady of Peranth, the second-largest territory in Terrasen. 2 years later, she had borne him Elide, heir of Peranth. She loved Marion's stories, and it was those stories she clung to in the quiet and tension of the next few days, when winter still gripped the world and made the manor groan. The house was creaking in the brisk winds the night her mother walked into her bedroom, far less grand than the one in the palace, but still lovely. They only summered here, as the house was too drafty for winter and the roads too perilous. The fact that they'd come. "Still not asleep?" her mother asked. Lady Marion rose from beside the bed. After a few warm words, Marion left, smiling at them both. Her mother curled up on the mattress, drawing her in close. "I'm sorry," her mother whispered under her head, for the nightmares had also been of drowning, of icy water closing over her head. "I am so sorry, Fireheart." She buried her face in her mother's chest, savoring the warmth. "Are you still frightened of sleeping?" She nodded, clinging tighter. "I have a gift, then?" When she didn't move, her mother said, "Don't you wish to see it?" She shook her head. She didn't want a gift. "But this will protect you from harm. This will keep you safe always." She lifted her head to find her mother smiling as she removed the golden chain and heavy round medallion from beneath her nightgown and held it out to her. She looked at the amulet, then at her mother, eyes wide. The amulet of Orinth, the heirloom honored above all others of their house. Its round disc was the size of her palm, and on its cerulean front, a white stag had been carved of horn, horn gifted from the Lord of the Forest. Between his curling antlers was a burning crown of gold, the immortal star that watched over them and pointed the way home to Terrasen. She knew every inch of the amulet, had run her fingers over it countless times, and memorized the shape of the symbols etched into the back. Words in a strange language that no one could remember. "Father gave this to you when you were in Wendlin, to protect you." The smile remained. "And before that, his uncle gave it to him when he came of age. It is a gift meant to be given to people in our family, to those who need its guidance." She was too stunned to object, as her mother slipped the chain over her head and arranged the amulet down her front. It hung almost to her navel, a warm, heavy weight. "Never take it off. Never lose it." Her mother kissed her brow. "Wear it, and know that you are loved, Fireheart, that you are safe, and it is the strength of this." She placed a hand on her heart. "That matters. Wherever you go, Aelin," she whispered, "no matter how far, this will lead you home." She had lost the amulet of Orinth, lost it that very same night. She could not bear it. She tried begging the Vog princes to put her out of her misery and drain her into nothing, but she had no voice here. Hours after her mother had given her the amulet of Orinth, a storm had struck. It was a storm of unnatural darkness, and in it she felt that wriggling, horrific thing pushing against her mind again. Her parents remained unconscious along with everyone else in the manor, even though a strange smell coated the air. She had clutched the amulet to her chest when she awoke to the pure dark and the thunder, clutched it, and prayed to every god she knew. But the amulet had not given her strength or courage. and she had slunk to her parents' room, as black as her own, save for the window flapping in the gusting wind and rain. The rain had soaked everything, but they had to be exhausted from dealing with her, and from the anxiety they tried to hide. So she shut the window for them, and carefully crawled into their damp bed so that she did not wake them. They didn't reach for her, didn't ask what was wrong. And the bed was so cold, colder than her own, and reeking of copper and iron, and that scent that did not sit well with her. It was to that scent that she awoke when the maid screamed. Lady Marian rushed in, eyes wide but clear. She did not look at her dead friends, but went straight to the bed and leaned across Evelyn's corpse. The lady-in-waiting was small and delicately boned, but she somehow lifted her away from her parents, holding her tightly as she rushed from the room. The few servants at the manor were in a panic, some racing for help that was at least a day away, some fleeing. Lady Marian stayed. Marian stayed and drew a bath, helping her peel away the cold, bloody nightgown. They did not talk, did not try. Lady Marian bathed her, and when she was clean and dry, she carried her down to the cold kitchen. Marian sat her at the long table, bundled in a blanket, and set about building the hearth fire. She had not spoken today. There were no sounds or words left in her anyway. One of the few remaining servants burst in, shouting to the empty house that King Orlan was dead too. Murdered in his bed, just like. Lady Marian was out of the kitchen with her teeth bared before the man could enter. She didn't listen to gentle Marian slapping him, ordering him to get out and find help. Find real help and not useless news. Murdered. Her family was dead. There was no coming back from death. And her parents. What had the servants done with their... Shaking hit her so hard the blanket tumbled away. She couldn't stop her teeth from clacking. It was a miracle she stayed in the chair. It couldn't be true. This was another nightmare, and she would awaken to her father stroking her hair, her mother smiling, awaken in Orinth, and... The warm weight of the blanket wrapped around her again, and Lady Marian scooped her into her lap, rocking.
I know. I'm not going to leave. I'm going to stay with you until help comes. They'll be here tomorrow. Lord Lochin, Captain Quinn, your Adian. They're all going to be here tomorrow. Maybe even by dawn.
But Lady Marian was shaking too.
I know,
she kept saying, weeping quietly.
I know.
The fire died down, along with Marian's crying. They held on to each other, rooted to that kitchen chair. They waited for the dawn, and for the others who would help somehow. A clopping issued from outside, faint, but the world was so silent that they heard the lone horse. It was still dark. Lady Marian scanned the kitchen windows, listening to the horse slowly circling, until they were under the table in a flash, Marian pressing her into the freezing floor, covering her with her delicate body. The horse headed toward the darkened front of the house. The front, because the kitchen light might suggest to whoever it was that someone was inside. The front was better for sneaking in, to finish what had begun the night before.
Aelin?
Marian whispered, and small, strong hands found her face, forcing her to look at the whitest snow features, the blood-red lips.
Aelin, listen to me.
Though Marian was breathing quickly, her voice was even.
You are going to run for the river. Do you remember the way to the footbridge?
The narrow rope and wood bridge across the ravine, and the rushing river Florine below. She nodded.
Good girl. Make for the bridge and cross it. Do you remember the empty farm down the road? Find a place to hide there, and do not come out. Do not let yourself be seen by anyone except someone you recognize, not even if they say they're a friend. Wait for the court. They will find you.
She was shaking again, but Marion gripped her shoulders.
I am going to buy you what time I can, Aelin. No matter what you hear, no matter what you see, don't look back, and don't stop until you find a place to hide.
She shook her head, silent tears finding their way out at last. The front door groaned, a quick movement. Lady Marion reached for the dagger in her boot. It glinted in the dim light.
When I say run, you run, Aelin. Do you understand?
She didn't want to, not at all, but she nodded. Lady Marion brushed a kiss to her brow.
Tell my Elide.
Her voice broke.
Tell my Elide that I love her very much.
A soft thud of approaching footsteps from the front of the house. Lady Marion dragged her from under the table and eased open the kitchen door only wide enough for her to squeeze through.
Run.
Now, Lady Marion said, and shoved her into the night. The door shut behind her, and then there was only the cold, dark air and the trees that led toward the path to the bridge. She staggered into a run. Her legs were leaden, her bare feet tearing on the ground, but she made it to the trees, just as there was a crash from the house. She gripped a trunk, her knees buckling. Through the open window, she could see Lady Marion standing before a hooded, towering man, her daggers out but trembling.
You will not find her!
The man said something that had Marion backing to the door, not to run, but to block it. She was so small, her nursemaid, so small against him.
She is a child,
Marion bellowed. She had never heard her scream like that, with rage and disgust and despair. Marion raised her daggers, precisely how her husband had shown her again and again. She should help, not cower in the trees. She had learned to hold a knife and a small sword. She should help. The man lunged for Marion, but she darted out of the way, and then leapt on him, slicing and tearing and biting. And then something broke. Something broke so fundamentally she knew there was no coming back from it, either for her or Lady Marion. As the man grabbed the woman and threw her against the edge of the table, a crack of bone, then the arc of his blade going for her stunned form, for her head. Red sprayed. She knew enough about death to understand that once a head was severed like that, it was over. Knew that Lady Marion, who had loved her husband and daughter so much, was gone. Knew that this was called sacrifice. She ran. Ran through the barren trees, the brush ripping her clothes, her hair, shredding and biting. The man didn't bother to be quiet as he flung open the kitchen door, mounted his horse, and galloped after her. The hoofbeats were so powerful they seemed to echo through the forest. The horse had to be a monster. She tripped over a root and slammed into the earth. In the distance, the melting river was roaring. So close, but her ankle gave a bolt of agony. Stuck. She was stuck in the mud and roots. She yanked at the roots that held her, wood ripping her nails. And when that did nothing, she clawed at the muddy ground. Her fingers burned. A sword whined as it was drawn from its sheath, and the ground reverberated with the pounding hooves of the horse. Closer. Closer it came. A sacrifice. It had been a sacrifice, and now it would be in vain. More than death, That was what she hated most. The wasted sacrifice of Lady Marian. She clawed at the ground and yanked at the roots, and then...
Tiny eyes in the dark. Small fingers at the roots, heaving them up, up. Her foot slipped free, and she was up again, unable to thank the little folk who had already vanished, unable to do anything but run, limping now. The man was so close, the bracken cracking behind, but she knew the way. She had come through here so many times that the darkness was no obstacle. She only had to make it to the bridge. His horse could not pass, and she was fast enough to outrun him. The little folk might help her again. She only had to make it to the bridge. A break in the trees, and the river's roar grew overpowering. She was so close now. She felt and heard, rather than saw, his horse break through the trees behind her, the whoosh of his sword as he lifted it, preparing to cleave her head right there. There were the twin posts, faint on the moonless night. The bridge. She had made it, and now she only had yards. Now a few feet. Now... The breath of his horse was hot on her neck, as she flung herself between the two posts of the bridge, making a leap onto the wooden planks. Making a leap onto thin air. She had not missed it. No. Those were the posts, and... He had cut the bridge. It was her only thought as she plummeted. So fast she had no time to scream, before she hit the icy water and was pulled under. That moment Lady Marian had chosen a desperate hope for her kingdom over herself, over her husband and the daughter who would wait and wait for a return that would never come. That was the moment that had broken everything Aelin Galathinius was and had promised to be. Selena was lying on the ground, on the bottom of the world, on the bottom of hell. That was the moment she could not face, had not faced. For even then, she had known the enormity of that sacrifice. There was more, after the moment she'd hit the water. But those memories were hazy, a mix of ice and black water and strange light. And then she knew nothing more until Aerobin was crouched over her on the reedy riverbank, somewhere far away. She awoke in a strange bed in a cold keep, the amulet of Orinth lost to the river. Whatever magic it had, whatever protection, had been used up that night. Then the process of taking her fear and guilt and despair and twisting them into something new. Then the hate that had rebuilt her, the rage that had fueled her, smothering the memories she buried in a grave within her heart and never let out. She had taken Lady Marian's sacrifice and become a monster, almost as bad as the one who had murdered Lady Marian and her own family. That was why she could not, did not, go home. She had never looked for the death tolls in those initial weeks of slaughter, or the years afterward. But she knew Lord Lochan had been executed, Quinn and his men, and so many of those children, such bright lights, all hers to protect. And she had failed. Selena clung to the ground. It was what she had not been able to tell Kaol or Dorian or Elena. That when Nehemia arranged for her own death, so it would spur her into action. That sacrifice. That worthless sacrifice. She could not let go of the ground. There was nothing beneath it. Nowhere else to go. Nowhere to outrun this truth. She didn't know how long she lay on the bottom of wherever this was. But eventually the Volg princes started up again, barely more than shadows of thought and malice, as they stalked from memory to memory, as if sampling platters at a feast. Little bites. Sips.
They did not even look her way, for they had won, and she was glad of it. Let them do what they wanted. Let Narok carry her back to Otterlin and throw her at the king's feet. There was a scrape and crunch of shoes. Then a small, smooth hand slid toward her. But it was not Kaol or Sam or Nehemia who lay across from her, watching her with those sad turquoise eyes, her cheek against the moss, the young princess she had been. Aelin Galathinius reached a hand for her.
Get up, she said softly.
Selena shook her head. Aelin strained for her, bridging that rift in the foundation of the world.
Get up.
A promise. A promise for a better life. A better world. The Volg princes paused. She had wasted her life, wasted Marion's sacrifice. Those slaves had been butchered because she had failed, because she had not been there in time.
Get up,
someone said beyond the young princess.
Sam.
Sam, standing just beyond where she could see, smiling faintly.
Get up,
said another voice, a woman's. Nehemia.
Get up.
Two voices together, her mother and father, faces grave but eyes bright. Her uncle was beside them, the crown of Terrasen on his silver hair.
Get up,
he told her gently. One by one, like shadows emerging from the mist, they appeared. The faces of the people she had loved with her heart of wildfire. And then there was Lady Marion, smiling beside her husband.
Get up,
she whispered, her voice full of that hope for the world, and for the daughter she would never see again. A tremor in the darkness. Aelin still lay before her, hand still reaching. The Volg princes turned. As the demon princes moved, her mother stepped toward her, face and hair and build so like her own.
You are a disappointment, she hissed.
Her father crossed his muscular arms.
You are everything I hated about the world.
Her uncle, still wearing the antler crown long since burned to ash.
Better that you had died with us than shame us, degrade our memory, betray our people.
Their voices swirled together.
Traitor, murderer, liar. Thief. Coward.
Again and again, worming in just as the King of Otterland's power had wriggled in her mind like a maggot. The king hadn't done it merely to cause a disruption and hurt her. He had also done it to separate her family, to get them out of the castle, to take the blame away from Otterland and make it look like an outside attack. She had blamed herself for dragging them to the manor house to be butchered. But the king had planned it all, every minute detail. Except for the mistake of leaving her alive. Perhaps because the power of the amulet did indeed save her.
Come with us,
her family whispered.
Come with us into the ageless dark.
They reached for her, faces shadowed and twisted. Yet even those faces, so warped with hatred. She still loved them, even if they loathed her, even if it ached. Loved them until their hissing faded, until they vanished like smoke, leaving only Aelin lying beside her, as she had been all along. She looked at Aelin's face, the face she'd worn once, and at her still outstretched hand, so small and unscarred. The darkness of the Volg princes flickered. There was solid ground beneath her. Moss and grass. Not hell. Earth. The earth on which her kingdom lay, green and mountainous and as unyielding as its people. Her people. Her people waiting for 10 years, but no longer. She could see the snow-capped staghorns, the wild tangle of Oakwald at their feet, and Orinth, that city of light and learning, once a pillar of strength, and her home. It would be both again. She would not let that light go out. She would fill the world with it, with her light, her gift. She would light up the darkness so brightly that all who were lost or wounded or broken would find their way to it. A beacon for those who still dwelled in that abyss. It would not take a monster to destroy a monster, but light. Light to drive out darkness. She was not afraid. She would remake the world, remake it for them, those she had loved with this glorious burning heart. A world so brilliant and prosperous that when she saw them again in the afterworld, she would not be ashamed. She would build it for her people who had survived this long and whom she would not abandon. She would make for them a kingdom such as there had never been, even if it took until her last breath. She was their queen, and she could offer them nothing less. Aelin Galathinius smiled at her, hand still outreached.
"Get up," the princess said.
Selena reached across the earth between them and brushed her fingers against Aelin's. And arose. Chapter 55. The barrier fell. But the darkness did not advance over the wardstones, and Rowan, who had been restrained by Gavriel and Lorkin in the grass outside the fortress, knew why. The creatures and Narok had captured a prize far greater than the Demi-Fae. The joy of feeding on her was something they planned to relish for a long, long while. Everything else was secondary, as if they'd forgotten to continue advancing, swept up in the frenzy of feasting. Behind them, the fighting continued, as it had for the past 20 minutes. Wind and ice were of no use against the darkness, though Rowan had hurled both against it the moment the barrier fell. Again and again, anything to pierce that eternal black and see what was left of the princess. Even as he started hearing a soft, warm female voice beckoning to him from the darkness. That voice he had spent centuries forgetting, which now tore him to shreds.
"Rowan,"
Gavriel murmured, tightening his grip on Rowan's arm. Rain had begun pouring.
"We are needed inside."
"No,"
he snarled. He knew Aelin was alive, because during all these weeks that they had been breathing each other's scents, they had become bonded. She was alive, but could be in any level of torment or decay. That was why Gavriel and Lorkin were holding him back. If they didn't, he would run for the darkness, where Lyria beckoned. But for Aelin, he had tried to break free.
"Rowan, the others!"
"No!"
Lorkin swore over the roar of the torrential rain.
"She is dead, you fool! Or close enough to it! You can still save other lives!"
They began hauling him to his feet, away from her.
"If you don't let me go, I'll rip your head from your body!"
he snarled at Lorkin. The commander who had offered him a company of warriors when he had nothing and no one left. Gavriel flicked his eyes to Lorkin in some silent conversation. Rowan tensed, preparing to fling them off. They would knock him unconscious sooner than allow him into that dark, where Lyria's beckoning had now turned to screaming for mercy.
"It wasn't real.
It wasn't real."
But Aelin was real, and was being drained of life with every moment they held him here. All he needed to get them unconscious was for Gavriel to drop his magical shield, which he'd had up against Rowan's own power from the moment he'd pinned him. He had to get into that dark, had to find her.
Let go,
he growled again. A rumbling shook the earth.